A reading from Philip Pullman, The Amber Spyglass, Volume 3 of his Dark Materials, Chapter 14. Know what it is.
Dad.
Yes. Oh, have I got something distracting? Okay. Back to Philip Pullman. A quote from John Ruskin. Labour without joy is base.
I read this with Mum.
Labour without sorrow is base. Sorrow without labour is base. Joy
without labour is base.
Okay, here we go. Will and Lyra slept through the night and woke up when the sun struck their eyelids. They actually awoke within seconds of each other with the same thought. But when they looked around, the Chevalier Tialis was calmly on guard close by. The force of the consistorial court has retreated, he told them. Mrs. Coulter is in the hands of King Ogunwe and on her way to Lord Asriel. How do we know? Said Will, sitting up stiffly. Have you been back through the window? No, we talk through the lodestone resonator. I reported our conversation, Tialis said to Lyra, to my commander, Lord Roque. And he has agreed that we should go with you to the bear, and that once you have seen him, you will come with us. So we are allies, and we shall help you as much as we can. Good, said Will. Then let's eat together. Do you eat our food? Thank you, yes, said the lady. Will took out his last few dried peaches and the stale flat loaf of rye bread, which was all he had left, and shared it all out among them. Though, of course, the spies did not take much. As for water, there doesn't seem to be any round here on this world, Will said. We'll have to wait till we go back through before we can have a drink. Then we better do that soon, said Lyra. First, though, she took out the altimeter. She could see it clearly, unlike the night before, but her fingers were slow and stiff after her long sleep. She asked if there was still any danger in the valley. No, came the answer. All the soldiers have gone and the villagers are in their homes, so they prepared to leave. The window looked strange in the dazzling air of the desert, giving on to the deep shaded bush, a square of thick green vegetation hanging in the air like a painting. The Galavispians wanted to look at it and were...
Pardon?
Galavispians, okay. And were astounded to see it was just not there from the back and how it only sprang into being when you came round from the side. I'll have to close it when we're through, Will said. Lyra tried to pinch the edges together, but her fingers couldn't find it at all, nor could the spies, despite the fineness of their hands. Only Will could feel exactly where the edges were, and he did it cleanly and quickly. How many worlds can you enter with the knife? Said Tialis. As many as there are, said Will. No one would ever have time to find out. He swung his rucksack up and led the way along the forest path. The dragonflies relished the fresh, moist air and darted like needles through the shafts of sunlight. The movements of the trees above were less violent and the air was cool and tranquil. So it was all the more shocking to see the twisted wreckage of a gyrocopter suspended among the branches with the body of its African pilot dangled in its seatbelt, half out of the door, and to find the charred remains of the Zeppelin a little further up. Soot-black strips of cloth, blackened struts and pipework, broken glass, and then the bodies, three men burnt to cinders, their limbs contorted and drawn up as if they were threatening to fight. And they were only the ones who had fallen near the path. There were other bodies and more wreckage on the cliff above and among the trees further down. Shocked and silenced, the two children moved through the carnage, while the spies on their dragonflies looked around more coolly, accustomed to battle, noting how it had gone and who had lost most. When they reached the top of the valley where the trees thinned out and the rainbow waterfalls began, they stopped to drink deeply of the ice-cold water. I hope that little girl's all right, said Will. We'll never have got you away if she hadn't woken you up. She went to a holy man to get that powder specially. She's all right, said Lyra, because I asked the altimeter last night. She thinks we're devils, though. She's afraid of us. She probably wishes she never got mixed up in it, but she's safe all right. They climbed up beside the waterfalls and refilled Will's canteen before striking off across the plateau towards the ridge where the altimeter told Lyra that Yorick had gone. And then there came a day of long, hard walking. No trouble for Will, but a torment for Lyra, whose limbs were weakened and softened before her long sleep. But she would sooner have her tongue torn out than confess how bad she felt. Limping, tight-lipped, trembling, she kept pace with Will and said nothing. Only when they sat down at noon did she allow herself so much as a whimper, and then only when Will had gone apart to relieve himself. The Lady Salmakia said, "Rest. There's no disgrace in being weary. But I don't want to let Will down. I don't want him to think I'm weak and holding him back. That's the last thing he thinks." "You don't know," said Lyra rudely. "You don't know him any more than you know me." "I know impertinence when I hear it," said the lady calmly. "Do as I tell you now and rest. Save your energy for the walking." Lyra felt mutinous, but the lady's glittering spurs were very clear in the sunlight, so she said nothing. Her companion, the Chevalier, was opening the case of the lodestone resonator, and curiosity overcoming resentment, Lyra watched to see what he did. The instrument looked like a short length of pencil made of dull grey-black stone resting on a stand of wood, and the Chevalier swept a tiny bow like a violinist's across the end while he pressed his fingers at various points along the surface. The places weren't marked, so he seemed to be touching it at random, and from the intensity of his expression and the certain fluency of his movements, Lyra knew it was as skilful and demanding a process as her own reading of the altimeter. After several minutes, the spy put the bow away and took up a pair of headphones, the earpieces no longer than Lyra's little fingernail, and wrapped one end of the wire tightly round a peg in the end of the stone, leading the rest along to another peg at the other end and wrapping it around that. By manipulating the two pegs and the tension on the wires between them, he could obviously hear a response to his own message. "How does that work?" she said when he'd finished. Tyalis looked at her as if to judge whether she was genuinely interested, and then said, "Your scientists, what do you call them? Experimental theologians would know of something called quantum entanglement. It means that two particles can exist that only have properties in common, so that whatever happens to one happens to the other at the same moment, no matter how far apart they are. Well, in our world, there is a way of taking a common lodestone and entangling all its particles and then splitting it in two so that both parts resonate together. The counterpart to this is with Lord Rocca, our commander. When I play on this one with my bow, the other one reproduces the sound exactly, and so we communicate." He put everything away and said something to the lady. She joined him and they went a little apart, talking too quietly for Lyra to hear, though Panteleimon became an owl and turned his great ears in their direction. Presently Will came back, and then they moved on, more slowly as the day went by and the track got steeper and the snow line nearer. They rested once more at the head of a rocky valley, because even Will could tell that Lyra was nearly finished. She was limping badly and her face was grey. "Let me see your feet," he said to her, "because if they're blistered, I'll put some ointment on." They were, badly, and she let him rub in the blood moss salve, closing her eyes and gritting her teeth. Meanwhile, the Chevalier was busy, and after a few minutes he put his lodestone away and said, "I've told Lord Rocca of our position, and they are sending a gyrocopter to bring us away as soon as you have spoken to your friend." Will nodded. Lyra took no notice. Presently she sat up wearily and pulled on her socks and shoes, and they set off once more. Another hour and most of the valley was in shadow, and Will was wondering whether they could find any shelter before night fell. But then Lyra gave a cry of relief and joy. Yorick! Yorick! She had seen him before. Will had. The Bear King had was some way off still, his white coat indistinct against a patch of snow. But when Lyra's voice echoed out, he turned his head, raised it to sniff, and bounded down the mountainside towards them. Ignoring Will, he let Lyra clasp his neck and bury her face in his fur, growling so deep that Will felt it through his feet. But Lyra felt it as pleasure and forgot her blisters and her weariness in a moment. "Oh, Yorick, my dear, I'm so glad to see you. I never thought I'd see you again after that time on Svalbard. And all the things that have happened. Is Mr. Scoresby safe? How's your kingdom? Are you all alone here?" The little spies had vanished. At all events, there seemed to be only the three of them now in the darkening mountainside, the boy and the girl and the great white bear. As if she had never wanted to be anywhere else, Lyra climbed up as Yorick offered his back and rode proud and happy as his dear friend carried her up the last stretch of the way to his cave. Will, preoccupied, didn't listen as Lyra talked to Yorick, though he did hear a cry of dismay at one point and heard her say, "Mr. Scoresby, oh no! Oh, it's too cruel! Really dead? You're sure, Yorick?" "The witch told me he set out to find the man called Grumman," said the bear. Will listened more closely now, for Barak and Balthamus had told him some of this. "What happened? Who killed him?" said Lyra, her voice shaky. "He died fighting. He kept a whole company of Muscovites at bay while the man escaped. I found his body. He died bravely. I shall avenge him." Lyra was weeping freely, and Will didn't know what to say, for it was his father whom this unknown man had died to save, and Lyra and the bear had both known and loved Lee Scoresby, and he had not. Soon Yorick turned aside and made for the entrance to a cave, very dark against the snow. Will didn't know where the spies were, but he was perfectly sure they were nearby. He wanted to speak quietly to Lyra, but not till he could see the Gallivespians and know he wasn't being overheard. He laid his rucksack in the cave mouth and sat down wearily. Beside him the bear was kindling a fire and Lyra watched, curious despite her sorrow. Yorick held a small rock of some sort of ironstone in his left forepaw and struck it no more than 3 or 4 times on a similar one on the floor. Each time a scatter of sparks burst out and went exactly where Yorick directed them, into a heap of shredded twigs and dried grass. Very soon that was ablaze, and Yorick calmly placed one log and then another and another until the fire was burning strongly. The children welcomed it because the air was very cold now, and then came something even better, a haunch of something that might have been goat. Yorick ate his meat raw, of course, but he spitted this joint on a sharp stick and laid it to roast across the fire for the two of them. "Is it easy, hunting up in these mountains, Yorick?" she said. "No, my people can't live here. I was wrong, but luckily so since I found you. What are your plans now?" Will looked out around the cave. They were sitting close to the fire and the firelight threw warm yellows and oranges on the Bear King's fur. Will could see no sign of the spies, but there was nothing for it. He had to ask. "King Yorick," he began, "my knife is broken." And then he looked past the bear and said, "No, wait." He was pointing at the wall. "If you're listening," he went on more loudly, "come out and do it honestly. Don't spy on us." Lyra and Yorick Berenson turned to see who he was talking to. The little man came out of the shadow and stood calmly in the light on a ledge higher than the children's heads. Yorick growled. "You haven't asked Yorick Berenson for permission to enter his cave," Will said, "and he is a king, and you're just a spy. You should show more respect." Lyra loved hearing that. She looked at Will with pleasure and saw him fierce and contemptuous. But the Chevalier's expression, as he looked at Will, was displeased. "We have been truthful with you," he said. "It was dishonourable to deceive us." Will stood up. His daemon, Lyra thought, would have the form of a tigress, and she shrank back from the anger she imagined the great animal to show. "If we deceived you, it was necessary," he said. "Would you have agreed to come here if you knew the knife was broken? Of course you wouldn't. You'd have used your venom to make us unconscious, and then you'd have called for help and have us kidnapped and taken to Lord Asriel. So we had to trick you, Tyalus, and you'll just have to put up with it." Yark Berenson said, "Who is this?" "Spies," said Will, "sent by Lord Asriel. They helped us escape yesterday, but they're not on our side. They shouldn't hide and eavesdrop on us. And if they do, they're the last people who should talk about dishonour." The spy's glare was so ferocious that he looked ready to take on Yorick himself, never mind the unarmed Will. But Tyalus was in the wrong, and he knew it. All he could do was bow and apologise. "Your Majesty," he said to Yorick, who growled at once. The Chevalier's eyes flashed hatred at Will and defiance and warning at Lyra, and a cold and wary respect at Yorick. The clarity of his features made all these expressions vivid and bright, as if a light shone on him. Besides him, the Lady Salmakia was emerging from the shadow, and ignoring the children completely, she made a curtsy to the bear. "Forgive us," she said to Yorick. "The habit of concealment is hard to break, and my companion, the Chevalier Tyalus, and I, the Lady Salmakia, have been among our enemies for so long that out of pure habit we neglected to pay you the proper curtsy. We're accompanying this boy and girl to make sure they arrive safely in the care of Lord Asriel. We have no other aim, and certainly no harmful intentions towards you, King Yorick Berenson." If Yorick wondered how such tiny beings would cause him harm, he didn't show it. Not only was his expression naturally hard to read, but he had his curtsy too, and the lady had spoken graciously enough. "Come down by the fire," he said. "There is food enough and plenty, if you are hungry. Will, you began to speak about the knife." "Yes," said Will. "I thought it would never happen, but it's broken, and the altheometer told Lyra that you'd be able to mend it. I was going to ask more politely, but there it is. Can you mend it, Yorick?" "Show me." Will shook all of the pieces out of the sheath and laid them on the rocky floor, pushing them about carefully until they were in their right places, and he could see that they were all there. Lyra held a burning branch up, and in its light Yorick bent low to look closely at each piece, touching it delicately with his massive claws and lifting it up to turn it this way and that and examine the break. Will marvelled at the deftness of those huge black hooks. And then Yorick sat up again, his head reared high into the shadow. "Yes," he said, answering exactly the question and no more. Lyra said, knowing what he meant, "Ah, but will you, Yorick? You couldn't believe how important this is. If we can't get it mended, then we're in desperate trouble, and not only us." "I don't like that knife," Yorick said. "I fear what it can do. I have never known anything so dangerous. The most deadly fighting machines are little toys compared to that knife. The harm it can do is unlimited. It would have been infinitely better if it had never been made." "But with it," began Will. Yorick didn't let him finish, but went on. "With it you can do strange things. What you don't know is that the knife is what the knife does on its own. Your intentions may be good. The knife has intentions too." "How can that be?" said Will. "The intentions of a tool are what it does. A hammer intends to strike. A vice intends to hold fast. A lever intends to lift. They are what it is made for. Sometimes in doing what you intend, you also do what the knife intends without knowing. Can you see the sharpest edge of that knife?" "No," said Will. For it was true. The edge diminished to a thinness so fine that the eye could not reach it. "Then how can you know everything it does?" "I can't, but I must still use it and do what I can to help good things come about. If I did nothing, I'd be worse than useless. I'd be guilty." Lara was following this closely, and seeing Yorick still unwilling, she said, "Yorick, you know how wicked..."